Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And today we have Corinne Krummelmeyer on the podcast with us. And that is such a mouthful name that I get asked all the time, Corinne, like, what is your last name? How is it pronounced? How do you spell it? And I still don't know how to spell it. And I will copy and paste it from emails and stuff to this day. I just want to point that out. Let me read your bio real fast, then I'm going to turn it over to you. Corinne is a wife and a mom to four girls. She has a degree in elementary education, but she's been a stay-at-home mom for the last 13 years, which your oldest daughter just turned 13, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, on Easter.
That's awesome. Corinne just became an online admissions counselor for Greenville University and currently spends her days trying to balance soccer, dance, laundry, and working. And if she could, she would spend more time writing, being with friends and family, and sitting by the ocean, which I am on board for. So let's plan a trip.
Okay, sounds good.
Well, welcome, Corinne.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Give us a little backstory for yourself, for our listeners.
Well, I've actually lived in Illinois now for 21 years, which is the longest I ever lived anywhere. So that's an accomplishment in a military kid's life. So that's exciting for me. I'm happy to be able to call one place home for once. I graduated college and taught for a few years before getting married and then moving again a lot, although always ending up back in Illinois. Due to my husband's career, professional sports career, we moved all over the place again, even though I swore I'd never do that after the military. and then finally landed here with a bunch of kids. And so we're just doing the parent life and hanging out and just started a new job with Greenville University. Thanks to Deidre and a little bit of Megan, I think too, behind the scenes. And I really like that new endeavor. So it's all an adventure. That's for sure.
So besides Illinois, what is the coolest place you've ever lived?
I would have to say England. That was high school for me, was in England. We lived there for 3 years and at the time moving to England, you know, leaving all my middle school friends and moving there, it felt like just the worst thing my parents could possibly do to me. But I look back on it and think of all the experiences I have just from those few short years alone. And yeah, I'm really thankful for that time period.
Did you go to a regular, like a British school, or was it more on base kind of living?
I did my first year. So my freshman year of high school, it wasn't a typical British school. It was like a small private church, of course. But it was British in the sense of, who was running it in that sense. But then I was on the school on base. So that was really just like an American high school without all the extra stuff, because they were always like, anything you do can and will be used against you and your father.
Oh no.
So
it's a lot to live up to.
I was just like, okay, fine. Scary people.
I just realized we got like 5 minutes into this and I haven't even said that you're an Enneagram 7. Like, you're our 7 guest. And I think it's fitting to talk about the fact that you've kind of lived everywhere as a 7, because even though you swear that you don't ever want to do that again and you like having a place to call home, I'm guessing there's a part of you that liked the wanderlust of that.
Yes, definitely. It was always one of those, like, actually having to leave my friends and the comfort of all that, that was always super hard in the emotional sense, because I love people, you know, I'm an extrovert. I always had a lot of friends and it just always felt like the end of the world kind of a thing to leave the people. But it was always an adventure. I mean, I never like walked into a new place and thought, man, this is really going to be terrible or anything like that. There was always something good to look forward to in my mind, you know? And then it was funny because I was just thinking of this recently, like, being still for so long, I think I'm getting a little bored. And, you know, not that I mean, I'm super happy for the life that I have. And I am happy for the stability and that my kids get to say that they grew up with their cousins and around family and things. I never got to say that. That I'm also like, but we're just here. So there is a little part of me, I think, that gets a little itchy sometimes.
That feels right. I mean, that tracks for me, and I'm an Enneagram one, so I can imagine much more as a seven, especially when you're in the stage of parenting that you are. You've just literally been bound to home for bedtime routines every night, and now all the activities. It's really hard to find a break from routine, and that's probably what you're really craving more than even a change of location. It's just get out of the routine a little bit, But you're getting there. You're so close. Your oldest is 13. I'm telling you, it's right on the other side. Five, 10
I
years
think
from
we're
now.
getting closer. We're getting closer. And as the girls get older and they have more activities and places that they have to go and travel type, engagements and things, I'm like, okay, I can get a little taste of it. One of the girls has a travel soccer tournament this coming weekend. And Luke was like, do you want to go? And I was like, what kind of question is that? I mean, like, he's
Of
an
course.
Enneagram 5, so I think he's like, do you really tell me all the things? And I'm like, the answer is always yes. Like, just file that in your informative box that you keep in your head.
My
So,
gosh, that's funny. Okay, so tell us a little bit about how you came to know about the Enneagram and settle on the fact that you were a seven.
well, actually, I think it was because the Enneagram kind of became trendy a few years ago. And I didn't know anything about it, but it was actually, it had to be the end of 2019 because it was just before 2020 when we were all stuck at home together that I started noticing people just talking about it on social media. And I noticed Megan actually posting things like she actually seemed like she knew something about it as opposed to just people posting numbers that didn't mean a whole lot to me. And so I did talk to Megan about it. I private messaged her and was like, can you tell me what this means? I mean, I've taken just, I think because of being in education and learning about people and development and that sort of things, I remember in college taking all types of personality tests and then learning about temperament once I moved here through church and things like that. And I find it all kind of fascinating. And I found it helpful really at different times in my life. And that was a point in my life where I was really starting to try to focus on things after all the babies and all the routines and all the being stuck in the house kind of things, where I just knew it was time for me to kind of really focus on things that I needed to work on. And adjust and, do better at basically. And so I thought, well, maybe this is something that would be a cool tool to have in my tool belt. And so I asked Megan a lot of questions. She was like, well, maybe you're this and maybe you're that and maybe you're this. And I was like, I think I'm not giving her the right information because then I'd go back.
We had toyed with the fact that you might be a nine for a little bit, and you had kind of like, you were like, okay, I'm going to research that and kind of find out. But that's when you came back and said, I don't think this is me. I'm pretty sure it's seven. So what was it that kind of cinched that for you, where you're like, yeah, that's why I'm a seven and not a nine?
Well, actually, it was funny. There were just some things that I think going on in my own life, just some conflicts and relational things where I had maybe settled into a space where I was like looking at it from through a seven lens. It was because it was painful. And knowing that my number one job in life is to avoid painful things. So I had settled into this idea that if I just kind of wrote it out, it would be less painful. And that sounds probably like a nine or looks like a nine from the surface, that I was just kind of trying to keep the peace. But actually, when Luke read something about it, he was like, you, that is definitely not you. And then you said something like, that's such a nine thing to say, just in a comment, like a passing, probably social media comment. And I was like, yeah, something just, it just hit weird. Like, that just doesn't feel right. Like, the motivation behind that, that's not why I'm doing it. I don't really care about keeping the peace. And it was Suzanne Stabile when I was just amening and yes, that's it. And that is me 100%. She actually said pain felt like a suit that didn't fit, you know, like when you had to sit in something painful. And when she said that, and so that's what we do. We try to get that off, you know, and that's how we work around the things in our life. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was it. So,
That's a great analogy. I mean, I've probably heard her say that, but I didn't remember it. That's really
yeah.
cool.
I don't even know if she said it or the person that she was interviewing
Oh, yeah.
said it as a seven because she was talking about some painful places that she had walked.
Yeah.
Her counselor, I think, had said, I just need you to go home and sit with it. Like, I'm not helping you right now, kind of thing. And that's when she was like, yeah, this is not how I do life. So,
Don't want to go sit in this. It's uncomfortable. It's hard.
definitely. Yeah.
You said your number one job is to avoid pain, and I just to put some IFS terminology to that, that sounds like a really big protector in your life then would be whatever it is that avoids pain for you. You want to talk a little bit about that protector for
Yes.
me?
Yeah, I think just from an early age, my parents divorced when I was young, and but I have some memories of being like 3 and 4, some early memories of just their conflicts, their relational conflicts, and then how I was like, yeah, I need to stay out of that. And the best way to do that was, I found ways of like, well, if I'm the good kid, if I'm the one who kind of reads the room and feels the emotion that they're putting off, and then I just figure out what they need from me. You know, that was kind of how I avoided the pain of maybe it was that I was worried I would get sucked into that
Yeah.
hurt and anger that I was picking up from them. And then my mom struggled just with anger a lot while I was growing up. And just as a disclaimer for her sake, she has come a long way and done a lot of work on, on her own and with Jesus, and really hard to make sure my siblings flew under the radar. They were not good at that. But anyway, yeah, I would say that was probably a protector of some sort. Yeah.
It's actually gets us into a little bit about how we share lines, so for you in stress would go to one, and that sounds like a one kind of protector that would say, okay, the best way to avoid pain as a seven, which is what's motivating that a little differently than what would motivate an actual Enneagram one, but let's try this. Let's try being the good kid and following the rules and being others focused to see what they're expecting of us so that we can do, make sure that things are okay and stay calm. So that feels like that could be a manager that is kind of on that line that you share with one. Very
Yes.
interesting that you started recognizing that really early on. And of course, that's where you go in stress first, So in your own member, you may have just wanted to have fun, but you getting them to joke or do something fun with you wasn't working. So you're like, okay, this isn't working. And the one line kicks in. Can you
Yeah.
see some of that the other direction? So you would also share a line with five then. What that's a little bit more insecurity, but I still think that touch point can go whether you're in stress or security. But what does that look like for you as you move toward five?
I don't know. I think I just learned to, well, I think as far as the security part, I've learned to maybe like slow down a little bit and not always have to run headfirst into everything. Like it's just some grand adventure waiting for me. Like it's okay to gather a little information first and, kind of prepare a little bit. And Luke is a five. My husband is a five. So, we share that line, and I think it when we can connect on that, it's helpful because then we're ready for the adventure instead of just, and I think as a kid growing up, I think I learned how to gather the information necessary to avoid the pain, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily intuitively good at picking up on everybody's emotions. That's not naturally wired into me, I don't think. As much as it is, that line to five that says, okay, if I do that,
Yeah.
then, I'm prepared a little bit better on what they will want from me or what will just help me stay out of the way of whatever they have going on over
That
there.
is actually the Enneagram 5's focus of, I'm sorry, 7 or 5's focus of attention is gathering. So it's interesting that you use that language, like when you make that move to 5, because what you're gathering isn't maybe for the same reason a 5 would, but to gather what you need to be able to live pain-free, really,
Yes.
So just
Yeah.
interesting vocabulary for you to use. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it helped with, having kids and everything too. That as a seven, all the there were a lot of stressors, obviously, for anybody. There's a lot of stressors having a bunch of kids really close together, especially. But I learned that even though I tend to buck a schedule and a system, feeling like it would be confining, that it actually helped and freed me up. And I think that was that five side saying, remember that the gathering of the information and the setting it in place actually frees you up a little bit, on the
Yeah.
flip side. That's hard for me to remember sometimes, but I think it's true.
And the structure that that one line would bring you to, honestly, like I think there's really good gifts in both the one and the five for you in those spaces.
Yeah, I agree with that. I tend to look only at the stressful side of one because I think that's what I go to the fastest. But I've noticed the older I get, I see the benefits of being, having that connection to one and being able to pick up on, okay, if I can, I might have to write it on a sticky note. I don't know if a real one has, an actual one has to do that, but I might have to write it down. But it's helpful to have that structure for sure.
Do we like to write down lists? Yes, yes, we do.
Okay, so it is one thing.
I also don't need a schedule to just inherently kind of know how I want to disperse my day through things. So that is sort of just in me, maybe. I don't know.
Probably
Anyway,
in you
I'm here to
more
talk about ones.
than
Okay, some other IFS language is we haven't really talked about the exiles. So the parts that are the more tender parts of us that usually are the parts that carry some kind of lie about their worth or their value or what is hard or their place in the world. So you said that you really knew you were a seven when you recognized like that to avoid pain was your number one goal. So if you've met any parts of yourself that maybe you Jesus has just encountered to replace with a truth? Could you put that into words? Could you identify a part that is a more exiled part?
So I do think that there, and I don't know if this is right. I don't know if this is exactly what you're asking, but I think there was a part of me that would be like that kid part of me that really believed that even though I knew my mom loved me, I never really doubted that she loved me, but because of her own way of handling her life and her stressors and her conflicts, that she probably wasn't gonna really take care of certain places. And for sure, my real dad was not had shown me, I mean, he showed me he loved me, but he was definitely not capable of showing up in like the way a dad would show up.
Yeah.
So I think I learned early on to that I would be the one who would carry that and take care of that. And if I couldn't, then you were just not gonna know that I couldn't. Like I was still gonna figure out a way to like just keep my distance from letting you guys know. So I don't know if that's what you're talking about. I would say that that those are probably some of the places that God's been working on most recently with me. Yeah. So
Yeah, when we teach Enneagram, we teach about the wounding message and the lost childhood message and some of those things. And that really is an Enneagram 7 in so many words, is I have to stand independently because I really don't know that I can trust that someone else will take care of me, you know, which is exactly what you're describing. Now, you're describing it with your own experiences, but, you know, other Enneagram sevens may have a different kind of situation. Maybe their parents didn't divorce, or maybe their relationship with one of them was different, but there's still, you picked up this message that you have to take care of yourself here, you know, which is interesting. So I wonder how, I could make some guesses, but maybe you could draw the parallel yourself. How does that relate to avoiding pain? What is the connection of those two?
Well, I think so. My mom was a great mom as far as like taking care of me physically, and I knew that she loved me. I mean, she was always telling me she loved me, but just this. There was kind of a dichotomy because of her struggle with anger and, you know, how she was raised by an alcoholic father for most of her life, you know, and until miraculously Jesus saved him, you know, but so that's what she knew growing up. And, you know, how that translated to me was, I think just there was pain in not knowing what would set her off, what would make her upset. I knew in my logical brain that it wasn't me. But as a kid, you can only process that so much. And so it was painful whether you knew it was you or not. It was painful if my brother was getting in trouble and he didn't really know why he was getting in trouble. And so that was painful too. And then my dad just constantly disappointed me as far as like he wasn't consistent. When he showed up, he was great and he loved me, you know, as best he could, but he just was never consistent. And so he let us down constantly because of that inconsistency. And I think that was, you know, where it was like, well, if I just take care of my own emotions and my own little space that I create, you know, whether that was, you know, my room or just in the car, like I'm just blocking all of you crazy people out, you know, or eventually coming to terms with the fact that I was going to be let down so I could just anticipate that and just tell myself, well, he loves me. You know, I can just reframe that like he loves me, he's doing the best he can, and that's as good as it gets, you know. That was how I avoided the real pain of like what that really felt like. Like I didn't do that for a long, long, long adulthood time.
It sounds so eight-ish, the seven message and the eight message. And so I'm going to ask you a question about this because, you know, sevens, they don't think it's okay to depend on people, and eights don't think it's okay to trust people. And I'm wondering if you can see like that little difference for you. And even your mechanisms of how to kind of get around that. So for a seven, it's going to be like, let's distract and have fun by standing independently. And for an eight, it's going to be all about the goal ahead of them that they're going to go conquer, right? So it's a little bit of a different mechanism to get there. But where do you see kind of that eight part play out in you? Just, I don't know if you have a big eight wing or not, but I'm sure you can find some eight part in you. I'm wondering, can you explain the difference?
Yeah, I would say like I don't really have a problem trusting people, and honestly, I probably trusted a lot of people I shouldn't have trusted for way too long because I could always find the good, right? I mean, I could always be like, well, they didn't really mean that, or oh, well, they would never do that to me, or blah blah blah, fill in the blank. But so I definitely it wasn't about that. It was probably more of I guess as an adult looking at it, it was more of like, I don't know what you just used a word, Megan. Like they had trouble, eights have trouble trusting. What did you say for sevens?
They don't think it's okay to depend on other people.
Depend on other people. So it was like, I could trust them as far as like, I could trust that they were a good person. They really probably meant the best and all of that. But like, I was still taking care of myself. You know, like I wasn't really maybe being super vulnerable, you know, even though I probably thought I was. But with like my deep emotions and stuff, that was probably not like, it was just like the goal of having fun together or enjoying their company or, you know, that type of relating.
That's a really good distinction. And I like the way you use that language too, because it shows the reframing like mechanism of a seven to do that in relationship. But it also shows me a really good like delineation of how people can understand, because sevens and eights are so close in the same stance, both future focused, all of that. Like, that's a really good distinction to make. You never were like, oh, that person is so bad, I can't trust them. It's more like, oh, I'll just worry about myself and they'll worry about themselves and we can still enjoy each other's company.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I'm not really a goal-oriented person, and as far as like, I'm not going to set a lot of goals. I'm not going to have like a big future like plan on how to get somewhere necessarily. It's just the goal is always to have fun and to be happy and to make the world better. I think that's the goal. And it sounds so silly and goofy when I say it out loud, but really, I think that really is it. I want the world to be, I think it's worth enjoying, I think is really what it is. And so that is always what I look for in things. And if this goal says it will be more enjoyable than that goal, then we are always going with the
Option
first
one every time.
every time.
That's awesome.
You also were using that when you're talking about your childhood, kind of like creating this bubble. So that's another way of saying reframing, but it could be a protector too. You know, that's a way to distance yourself between you and the pain of where somebody else is living. And so you use that language a little bit when you're talking about like the way an eight would be versus a seven. It's like, I'll exist here in my bubble because this is safe. And you can do whatever you want out there as long as that's not interfering with the
Right.
bubble I created.
Right.
Now, if
Yeah.
that happens, we might have other things that we need to do. So I'm
Exactly.
curious because that kind of gets into what we'd call a firefighter in IFS. When a manager isn't working for some reason, it's you've got this plan to stay in your bubble, but somebody else crashes in anyway. What kind of firefighter like behaviors or emotions do you recognize come up for you?
Well, at first I don't know. I'm so bad at like breaking things down.
I could tell you, I know this is new language for you, but you probably know from our church counseling, like when you have a blocked goal, what does that
Yes.
look like?
Yes. So I think I'm the kind of person that it takes a while for me to really admit that there's a blocked goal. I've gotten better at that because now I'm old and now I don't have time to waste and I have a blocked goal and I need you to just like move over because I'm not having fun and we're gonna get past this. So
Is would that be current? It would that be because maybe you didn't have a big eight wing? Because if you were to grab anger as a kid, that would actually cause more conflict and more pain for you. But now, as you're getting older, anger is a little bit more accessible. So are you growing into more of an eight part?
Oh yeah, I would say, and yeah, people in my life would probably be like, "Oh, 100%." to the point where I'm like, "Okay, where did the, I mean, this was probably years ago that that first started happening." But yeah, where I was like, "I didn't know I could be so angry," but that's because I wasn't allowed to be angry, in the sense of my mom could be angry, right? But you couldn't be angry because her anger will trump yours 100 times over.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, and if that's what anger looks like, then I don't want anything to do with it too, right? Because it caused pain to everybody. Come to find out, it was really actually rage, not anger. because anger serves a purpose and has a place, but rage is, I think, a whole nother thing. So
Yeah, rage is
thankfully,
trauma. It's a product of trauma, I think. And anger can be a tool for us. It can be an indicator that, you know, we need some help or we need boundaries, and that's a good thing.
right.
That's beautiful that you're leaning into that more in this season of life or allowing for it to have some voice.
Well, and I think it, I appreciate my eight wing, as a mom. And as a friend, and I look back and I see places, even as a friend, where I was like, man, I could have done more, I could have said more, I could have been more, I could have, because I think eights, and you guys can correct me, I think they have a real place, I don't know why I'm getting kind of emotional, but like a soft place for victims and people who are in pain. And I see that in people that I know, and I feel that deeply.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I've seen pain in my own life. I'm so sorry.
We like t crying. We're all about the crying.
What's a good thing?
This tends to happen on the podcast. I don't know if you've met Deidre before, but
She's always sounds so gracious when she cries, and I'm like,
do I? Do I? You sound beautiful. Let it out.
But I see where I have the ability to connect with that. And I'm thankful for it because it comes from a place where I have actually sat in my pain, willingly or not, and, you know, allowed God to do his work through those circumstances. And so then I can use that and pull on that eight wing and stand up for victims and the underdog and the people who are in pain. And then it also helps me, you know, like when someone's doing something with my kids or something like that, it's like I have a place where I can go, okay, well, there is a, it's like a righteous indignation, right? You know, where you can say, I just, and that might be a little bit of the one too, where you see, you know, these places where there could be something better, a better way, you know.
That's beautiful.
Well, all four of us, I don't know if you've learned much about harmony triads, but the four, the seven, and the one, we're all in the same harmony triad where we want to make the world a little bit better, more whole, more fun, like pain-free, just better in general as a one. So we all share that kind of common goal.
That's awesome. I love that.
That's like a beautiful gift that God's given us for the world. So the more and more we are free to stop protecting ourselves and start doing what he's called us to do, the more that the kingdom of God is brought to the earth, you know? And I just think that that's the thing we don't focus on a ton because we're so focused on everything that's wrong with us and all the reasons that we like react and we do this, but also there's a real pure motivation behind all of that. So the more we do this inner healing work, the more those things can more purely from a pure motivation flow to the world around us. And that's what it's all about. That's why we sit in our pain, is to get past our pain so that we can actually, you know, create connections instead of bubbles and create ministry instead of reaction. And it's so good.
Right. I agree. And it's, I think just recently I've been thinking about how my goal, like you were saying, my goal has not changed. I still want the world to be a happy, better place. And you know, as a five over the, you know, having a connection to five over the last few years, I've been thankful for that too, because it's just allowed me to kind of sit back and take in some stuff, instead of just being like, I can't, you know, like I put on that five, to take in the information. And because I've had places where I had to sit in painful things, hard things, where I can say now, okay, we can still make the world a better place, right? I mean, but now we have some real ways of doing that. And it's not just superficial and up there somewhere, you know, it's the real, like heart of the matter kind of stuff. So
that's so good. That's good stuff. Well, Corinne, thank you so much for joining us. And I know that there will be people out there, maybe fellow sevens or others, who will just be so blessed by this conversation.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.